the blessings
of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Saha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Saha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Saha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Sandhaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances. The precept of obedience to all good laws. The precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi sabha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. We are here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering. That we record the Sunday group discussions and they are made available to our monthly donors. So what would you like to
add? I had this fun realization this morning of the strength of my connection to the sports imagery we were using in the email class.
Uh-huh.
And so just a while ago in group, we had a reading on Tuesday night about, when you're sort of in an emergency situation, how you're not standing back from it, you're just in it,
Yeah.
The conditioning has no play.
Yeah.
And we had a kind of fun discussion about how in regular life, life is always like that, but we don't know it.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
So we think we don't have to be that engaged.
So like a near collision or something,
right.
You just react.
Right.
And so there's a level of engagement there that there's no time to get up and noodle about, oh, I wonder if I'm going to hit that car,
right.
Nothing
right.
like that. So, the point was is that in real life, it's really like that. We just don't realize it.
Right. So going back to the sports image, what I was looking at was, I was reminded, and somehow through this whole email class, and all those sports images that Sherry has used over the years, I hadn't connected that. All the time I was growing up, I was in sports. I played all the varsity sports for years and was in other sports as well. And it just came home to me, that same thing, that so yesterday I had an experience where I injured someone. And there was this moment of, there's a kind of, what's the point? Kind of hopelessness that sets in. It's like conditioning just enters in, and just lambastes me for a moment. And there's a kind of total loss of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was remembering was, when you're playing basketball or volleyball or something, when you miss a shot, you can't stand there and go, oh, well,
mm-hmm.
And just stand around feeling miserable, because the game goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a reminder that's true all the time, too.
Uh-huh.
That the game is always going on, and the only thing that changes is that I pull my attention is shifted from the game to what's wrong or something else.
Yeah, wow, that is really a neat application of that image, that the game goes on. And any time I get pulled away through my attention into feeling bad, feeling guilty, feeling distracted, whatever, I'm missing the game. It's going on, and I've just sidelined myself.
Right.
And probably with the opposite.
I've been
sidelined by conditioning, by that alliance with conditioning.
Yeah. So it's just so helpful to see that that's the same. It's the same phenomenon that the game is always happening,
mm-hmm.
and the question is, am I in it? Or have I put myself on the side, or have I been put on the sidelines by conditioning? And and it was helpful to remember that when I played, I played. That I was in the game. I was a real player, and I was always in the game. You know, you might, if you do something unfortunate in the game, you might have a moment for a darn, you know, and then you're in it because that's where your focus of attention is.
Yeah, it really is. The am I in the game or am I sidelined?
Yep.
And that's really the whole, you know, and you know, we talk, we keep correcting our language. We get sidelined by condition. We don't sideline ourselves. And in a way, there's a certain collusion with that that we are practicing breaking, right?
Yep.
So not in a self-hating way, but in a, maybe that is the oh darn. I don't want to do that. Getting back in the game. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's really about all it is. It's just a moment of recognition and then back in the game.
The other thing that I saw that was very helpful for me and just made sense of the enjoyment of being part of Sangha is I loved team competition. Mm-hmm. I did not like individual competition. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of interesting because on the Enneagram I'm a five, which is, you know, a five is always supposedly going for detachment. Mm-hmm. I loved team sports and I loved team competition, and I think it was because it wasn't so much about the winning losing, it was being part of the team.
Yeah.
And so that, I think that's part of, again, something I can call upon as a to recall that that's, I'm a player who likes to be part of a team. And doesn't actually like competition, and doesn't like being seeing herself as an individual competitor, you know, all out there by herself.
Yeah, might we say that through your experience with sports, you got to realize those deeper longings of the heart that the conditioning, in particular in this case, the five conditioning, would try to obfuscate, you know, and keep away from you. But through that experience, you know how to do that. You know the experience of being with the team, of competing without worrying about the score. Basically, it's about the team spirit, the participation together.
Right.
And that you can go to that at will. Really, you can draw on that, maybe is another way of saying it. Draw on that experience.
I do, and that we can say that, and we can also say that one of the gifts of the email class is that it called all that up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who knew all those sports analogies would
That's
be
right.
so powerful?
That's right.
They really are, and they're endless, aren't they?
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah,
nice. I was looking at the process of wanting, and in the interest of simplicity, also, like, conditioning will say, that's not that profound enough to talk about. Mm-hmm. Yet it is extremely profound because it's like everywhere. You know, that, and it's the origin of suffering. Just sort of saying the recollection this morning about the desire desire being the origin of suffering, and that wanting of something different is just always there. Mm-hmm. You know, just. And that process of wanting doesn't lead to having it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you miss everything. Like, it's right there in front of you when you're wanting something different.
Wait, you said about six really profound things, contrary to what Ego just said. So the wanting, that desire, is really the source of suffering because it is in opposition to what is by its nature. Mm-hmm. And that wanting doesn't lead to having. That's huge, right?
That
there's a process that we can be in of wanting. And there's that process. And then we think, or told, or conditioned, that is actually going to be helpful to getting that thing.
Right.
But it's so a scam. And that, while, and then that the last thing I heard today was that while we're in that, we are missing the fact that what life is offering us is right here. So not only does it keep us in the scam of not getting that particular thing, but we're missing out on the treasures, the jewels, the insights, the fun, the whatever, the joy that is right here.
Yeah,
gosh, that's
yeah. And that wanting not leading to having, I see it over and over as I practice more and more, and it gets deeper and deeper. Just to practice having versus practice wanting.
Yeah.
And it's just so, it's such a trick, you know, and it's such a belief that's ingrained in this conditioned structure that I'm in, and then it's, you know, it just keeps arising. Like even like when I used to live in this area, and then I moved away, and then I kept wishing I could come back more, and then I couldn't, and now I can. It was like on the way here this morning, it was like, gosh, I wish I could go to Starbucks. And it was like, wait a minute. This is what I've been wanting. Like,
the process got busted. Exactly. Because there was the wanting to be here when you're not, and then the wanting to be at Starbucks when it's not here. And that process is the very thing that you've been watching.
Yeah,
and you caught it.
Yeah, and it's just so, it's, you know, it's just right there, like, what, you know, you're watching it, and everything that we have is right here. I mean, everything that we want, we have, and then you have it, and it conditioned comes in with something,
yeah,
you know, just to trick you.
So, in other words, are you saying that? Okay, so are you seeing or saying that the thing that it's saying you want is not even arising from authenticity? It's interjected. It's a trick.
Yes,
that conditioned mind. So even when you were not living near here, mm-hmm, the wanting to be here was the trick too.
Yes.
Even though it can sound real like authentic, like of course I want to live somewhere near the mines or whatever.
Yeah.
But the interjection of it, mm-hmm, it is not real.
No, it isn't. And it's like, I think there's a lot of Zen stories about this, like, mm-hmm, you want enlightenment, that's not really having enlightenment,
mm-hmm,
or anything that you do towards it isn't really, you know, I mean, it's kind of one of those Zen things, I don't, mm-hmm, know how to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I know the story, you know, that's coming to mind, I think the punchline will convey the whole thing, is when the anxious men and Westerners who came in and were meeting with the Zen master and wanted to get busy and get on this enlightenment thing, and he, mm-hmm, says, would you like some more tea?
Mm-hmm.
And that's all, you know.
And it was all easy, and they didn't have to sit for hours.
Yeah. Well, and that they couldn't, he wasn't going to indulge that, you know,
yeah,
the wanting.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's just so good to watch that and,
yeah,
to not buy into it, not fall for it. And right now, it feels like the Sangha is so reflective of life.
Yeah.
You know, just everyone's so lit up, and that's like the opposite of that.
Yeah.
You know.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Because being lit up is just being right there with everything that's there.
Yeah. Yeah. Even when what's there is really hard stuff.
Yeah.
The,
yeah,
lit upness is not dependent on things being rosy. Or,
yeah,
cheery, or what, you know, ego's definition of lit up is really not what you're describing. If I'm understanding, it's that infusion of life and acceptance of whatever's here.
Well, and I would say especially when things aren't good,
yeah,
because the wanting of something different makes it worse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it brings in the suffering,
yeah,
rather than just being with it,
exactly,
or being with yourself, the mentor in life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sort of the proverbial adding insult to injury.
Yeah.
When we are hurt,
yeah,
and then having that insult, the suffering layer on top of that, it's just misery. And that's the part that's really optional.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Cameron.
I was having some experiences during the morning meditation that I think fits in with what we're saying, that about being present, being where everything is, and not being present is suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So particularly it shows up in the daily recollection. Now that saying the daily recollection, that I've been saying it every day for a lot of years, so it doesn't really require any mental thinking about it. What it requires is for me to be centered, and it just, the words arise when it's time for the words to arise.
Mm-hmm.
They just are there.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see as I sit there, you know, the mind goes boop, over here,
mm-hmm,
and I miss the word,
mm-hmm,
because I'm not there for it. And it's just so just so a manifestation of how life works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that neat, the way that, so it really doesn't require any kind of mental, like memory. You're not exercising your memory and saying the recollection.
Yeah.
And yet it does require full attention.
It does.
Yeah. And it's a great touchstone, the day of the recollection, is to see when I'm here. And because when you're here, you experience the words just arise and are there. Mm-hmm. And then you flip over here for a minute, and a word is missed.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And then going on to meditation, you know, there's not that real concrete thing to let me know that I've missed a word or something. Mm-hmm. But there's that same experience.
Mm-hmm.
That when I'm just here focusing on the breath and being present, there's one experience, and then there's going up in the head, and then there's in this, you know, or whatever's going on, and then coming back, oh, okay, now
yeah,
I remember.
yeah, that coming back, you know, and it's that, it's really, when you said that, there's no concrete thing like missing a word to bring you back. Mm-hmm. It makes arise the question that what is it then that brings us back?
Yeah. I think it's going back to the sports imagery. I think it's training. You know,
mm-hmm.
that we're training ourselves to direct our attention to being here,
mm-hmm.
and so then when we're training, we get to start seeing well. What are the signs that I'm here, and what are the signs that I'm not? You know,
mm-hmm.
like in sports, you know, you get a really good forehand, and that's different than a blooper or something.
Yeah,
you know?
And
you start to get the feel, and you have all the signals of what's a good hit, what's a bad hit,
yes,
what's right body posture, what's not, and so the training gets it all really fine tuned, so it takes less time, I think, to recognize that.
Yeah, we're training ourselves to watch for that feel of when the shot is on or when the shot is off.
Uh-huh.
And the same with meditation. We're training ourselves to uh-huh. know, to sense, to be attentive to when we're uh-huh. off. And
as you said that, I was thinking it's like when you're first learning the day of recollection, it does require, you know, you have to really kind of practice doing it, and it requires a little bit of memory and things like that. But over time, it just becomes letting those words come up.
Yeah, because you've done it enough where it's in there.
Right. And so it's like in sports. You know, when you're first doing them, it requires a lot of more work and whatever. And then as the practice and the training, things just kind of become mm-hmm. natural. That swing is there. You know.
Yeah, natural and still requiring our attention.
Still requiring attention, yeah. But not that, I don't know how much mind stuff is in, and some of it is in the beginning of sports training, I think, you know. You got to remember that you can't double dribble, you have to only do it once. You know, you can't step twice while you're holding the ball and things like that. But then after a while, you're not even thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just more natural. You know you can't do that. Your body knows you can't do that. And it's kind of like that.
Yeah, it really does boil down to training, doesn't
it? Training, yeah.
Training, never giving up, and repetition, and just keep showing up, and all those ways we talk about it, you know.
Yeah, and like was already said, what you just alluded to, is that also the times when you hit it bad is part of learning how to hit it good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's in the net. If I just get so discouraged that I'm finished with this game, I'm going to go try basketball. then I'm going to get to that point in basketball, and then I'm going to go on to golf or whatever.
Yeah, because just like we were just talking about, right, that's the process. The process is one of being frustrated and moving on, or, you know, giving up.
Continuing.
Yeah, and that process doesn't lead to then, well, I'm going to be good at this next sport then.
Right.
because one process doesn't lead to another.
Yeah.
It leads to only more. That's what we're, you know, what you practice is what you have. If what I'm practicing is getting discouraged and giving up, then
right.
that's what I have.
Right.
No matter where I am.
Right. And if I want to learn to play the game, then I don't mind the times that I don't look so good doing it. Mm-hmm. So same with practice, if I want to end suffering, then I can, you know, all of those times when ego hits the wall and looks like a fool, that has to be acknowledged as part of what happens and what you are putting into to becoming successful at the game of life.
Yeah, and we can even go woohoo, because that's a really big scene when those events.
That's really
when we're really disidentified, we can be thankful for those.
Yeah,
yeah. June.
I'm going to throw in my sports analogy.
Okay.
The ego class 8 belief is about there's no goal. There's no goal. So why do you do this for? Mm-hmm. You know, what keeps practice going for you? And I was looking at the guy had said a long time ago, you know, there's no goal in life. If there were, perhaps it is simply to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at, well, okay, I can get behind that. what stands in the way? Mm-hmm. And it is, of course, getting distracted by a conditioned mind, just going there, just that serene, well-tried path out of the present and into whatever fantasy it's currently tossing in. Mm-hmm. So the sports term that occurred to me this morning was, well, just cut the legs out from under.
Cut the legs out from under.
Yeah. And every team sport either. There is an element of cutting the legs out from under your opponent.
Oh, okay.
And so I was looking at, well, what is that? What is cutting the legs out from under that process, leaving the moment look like, or what is cutting the legs out from under that which holds me away from enjoying life, the work. And I think it's just really simple. It's what we've been talking about, what we always talk about, which is notice it, drop it, come back. But the picture that I've been carrying with me all morning, whenever and that drifting off happens, is a soccer player tackling the guy with the ball, and I'm just taking off with the ball.
Uh-huh. Literally knocking his legs off.
And if you do it skillfully, you don't get the whistle. So, where am I going?
Well, may I yes, jump in and reflect a little? Because I was like, you know, I was waiting with kind of on the edge of my cushion. What is it going to be? How do you knock the legs out from under, you know, conditioned process? And it really is that. It was drop the, you know, notice it and drop it. And the way that was arising for me, as you were saying, that was simply remove our attention. It's the same thing, right? Just remove the attention. And that does takes every bit of punch out of it, you know, every bit of power, every bit of speed or, you know, agility that opponent has is all feeding on our
attention. And energy.
Yeah, and when resistance. We notice it and drop it.
Yeah. It loves the energy of resistance.
Say that again?
It loves the energy of resistance.
Yeah, yeah. Either going with it or resisting it, it's still pumping the energy. Yeah. So that really is.
So I was also looking at, well, if the point of life, the goal of life is to enjoy it, and the process is to be in the present moment. What is it in the present that I'm enjoying? What is enjoyable about the present? And sometimes, a thing that is always enjoyable in the present is the fact that there's air in my lungs. Wouldn't, as Sherry's often pointed out, it wouldn't take long with not having air in the lungs before having air in the lungs would be utterless.
Yeah, let me reflect that. So it wouldn't take long of not having air in the lungs before having air in the lungs would be utter bliss. So why don't we just skip the not having air in the lungs and go to the utter bliss? And just in being there in that moment of really being present, that that's what I can be enjoying in this moment, is the air in the lungs. Yeah. And have the attention there.
Well, I can relate to, as usual, pretty much everything everybody has said. I don't know exactly the angle that I'm looking at, what I'm looking at, but it feels like, just based on what other people are saying, in some ways it's looking at recovery time. Mm-hmm. You know, how quick it seems like. So I've been in and out of being extremely identified for the last, like, 2 or 3, 4 days. And I've been watching that. I've been watching the process of, okay, what's it like to, you know, how quick can there be a recovery? How quick can the story be dropped? Mm-hmm. And how quick, you know, what's possible in terms of, okay, get it back here? Mm-hmm. Because it just comes, you know, when it's like, you know, I've never been in a boxing ring before, but it would be like taking, you know, punches, mm-hmm. you know? And some are a little heavier than others. Mm-hmm. And some knock us down, you know, clearly. But it's just a matter of, it feels like it's just a matter of getting back up. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, yeah, wow, that was tough. You know, pride is wounded, you know, feeling sorry for the self, you know, all these traits of it that, unfortunately, a lot of the time, you know, I tend to own. But even that's part of recovery. How quickly can I recover from not owning the traits of conditioning's resistance?
Gosh, that's really a neat image. That when we're okay, so we're in this boxing ring, and we're just getting hit, mm-hmm. you know, over and over. And part of the recovery we're taking a blow. Mm-hmm. The recovery itself is either mm-hmm. being here or going into, you know, regret or poor me or whatever, which is, in effect, another blow.
It's another, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So what you've been looking at is how do we recover from those in a way that really brings us to center mm-hmm. instead of sliding back into any other kind of ego game or ego trick.
Yeah. I'm smiling as you're saying that because, again, I actually know very little about boxing. You know, it's like a combination punch.
Uh-huh.
You know, like 1-2, uh-huh. 1-2. You know, like,
yeah. You don't have to know, right? We can just have practice for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
We're really intimate with that move.
That's right. That's right. And so it feels like that because on one level, like, you know, going along, not aware, obviously, but kind of an unconscious moment, you know, in unconsciousness, it happens. There's the seeing of it, that's the first punch. Mm-hmm. But then there's the second punch, which is like, you know, so how quick is the recovery from the seeing? How quick can the recovery be from that secondary place, which is kind of the survival strategies?
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it being, you know, sulking or I'm feeling sorry for myself or maybe pointing outwards and like, you know, what's wrong with them? And, you know, kind of mm-hmm. getting angry and throwing, you know, those, that's like the secondary, like how quick can that, how quick can that be dropped mm-hmm. for the present moment?
Mm-hmm.
That's really what, you know, and I guess for the player, for the boxer who's going through it, the bit that I'm still looking at, and I don't have clarity on, but it seems like, just from our conversation right now, that the thing that is taking the hits, the thing that is getting punched, isn't actually me. Mm-hmm. So I identify as it, you know, but if I look at it in some ways, and I don't know, I don't actually have clarity on this, but so when I say, like, you know, oof, there it is, like, you know, God, that was really painful. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't realize that was such and such, or kind of then the secondary thing. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I don't quite have a sense of this yet, but life isn't, I don't know how to say this. Do you see where I'm going?
Yeah, So what it feels like you're describing is when ego is fighting ego, and mm-hmm. we're identified with it. And so here's the punch, here's the secondary punch, and or the feeling bad, sulking, the whatever. And it's just doing its thing. But what I think you're pointing at is that in all of that, life isn't touched. I mean, yeah. Life isn't punched. Life isn't. It's all ego doing its thing.
Right.
And the reason we experience it is that we're identified with it.
That's right. So I'm
and
identifying.
That's the only reason, really.
Exactly. So I'm identifying as the kind of the boxer who's getting punched. Mm-hmm. But even that seems like it's part of the setup.
Yeah.
Because, of course, I'm not, really. It's happening through my body,
yeah.
for sure. But at the same time, I don't know, maybe one of the skills or one of the recovery techniques is recognizing that the thing that is taking the body blows is that which kind of like isn't life.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it may be contained within life, but it's like the, you know, the negative reflection, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah, and we've momentarily forgotten who we are,
yeah.
and gotten identified with that, mm-hmm. and I project that that's why the whole feeling bad was such a big theme, and is such a big mm-hmm. theme that we are not feeling bad, because yeah. that's the secondary.
Yeah,
you know, we can go momentarily unconscious, forget who we are, feel the punch, and then come back to, oh yeah, I remember mm-hmm. who I am, I'm alive. Unless we get suckered into belief to feeling bad.
That's right.
Whatever way. And that can look like all those ways you're describing, the sulking, yeah. the blaming, the all of that is, uh-huh. you know.
Exactly. Yeah, it is. It's that feeling bad place. And then, you know, in that place, you know, I was looking at that a little bit this morning too, and it's like waking up, it's utterly beautiful this morning. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's exquisite. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like the sky is so blue. The flowers in the garden are just, I mean, they're everything, by any measurement, by any stretch of imagination, it is just utterly the most exquisite morning this morning. And, you know, if there is any of that feeling bad, mm-hmm. or kind of figuring out, you know, why I'm feeling bad, or, you know, whatever that is, if it's anything other than just being right back in the moment with life, you know, it's just, everything is missed, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Even the air in our lungs is missed.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Jen, did I see your hands?
Oh, I'm good.
Is it passed? Okay. Justin?
Well, the sports analogy I've been enjoying is about practicing. I know how to practice something. Mm-hmm. Now, mm-hmm. which I didn't know before, you know, coming here. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about, you know, when I was younger, I played a lot of sports too, but I didn't know how to practice. Mm-hmm. I have a naturally athletic body, so I was naturally good at things, mm-hmm. but I never practiced them. So I was good enough to get to a certain level. Like I even made my high school tennis team, mm-hmm. But I didn't do all that well. With it, mm-hmm. because I never practiced. And it wasn't because of laziness, which was the conclusion I drew at the time. it was because I just didn't know how to. Mm-hmm. You know what, if I wanted to be good at it, I needed to, you know, okay, well, my serve is weak. I need to go out for 3 hours and get a big basket of balls, and I need to hit serves. Mm-hmm. You know, like that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it could have made such a huge difference.
Yeah.
But oh well, those times are gone. But I'm just so grateful now to know that. It's just like a base. It's just a very simple, basic skill. You know, you identify what it is that needs improvement, and then you practice that, and the result is almost guaranteed.
Yeah.
But I mean, I was just completely out. I had no idea that was something a part of life.
Yeah, and I project now you have the lived experience and the mentoring and the training and the guidance that was lacking back then when you were a kid is there. And so you have acquired that skill or that understanding of practice and are able to now apply that to whatever. But it really is something that that we have to learn how to do, isn't it?
It is, yeah. The guidance part is important too.
Yeah.
You just said that. Because that wasn't there either. The understanding, I mean, just crazy. I still struggle with this, but this blind trust of whatever appears in my head, not in the dropping in from life kind of way we talk about, but as a better idea.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can remember, you know, partway through my, you know, pretty mediocre tennis career, somebody, we had a coach, I don't really remember him, but it might have been him, it might have been somebody else saying, you know, I really wanted to hit the ball hard. But he said, you know, you might concentrate on getting it in the court instead of hitting it really hard. And, you know, it's funny because that stands out. I remember that. What I remember, almost nothing else about that whole thing. But I remember that. But I didn't follow it. You know, I didn't pay any attention to that as I remember.
Wow.
But that's been a big change, too, is just getting it that, you know, the stuff that's in here, it interferes with what's possible instead of adds to it. It presents itself as, well, this is leads towards, you know, this desired result. And giving that up for an actual source of guidance or mentoring or coaching or something really does lead towards. It's the thing the was that in the email class or I think it was in the email class, the thing about the coach, or maybe it was on the radio show. I don't know where it was, but deciding to, instead of going with the interpretation of what the coach is saying, just doing what the coach says, that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is really going to lead to improvement and, you know, skillfulness and all these kind of things. And going with the interpretation or just blind resistance to it is not going to get anywhere fast.
Yeah, I think it was in one of the groups. So let me reflect what I think you're saying, and that is that there is that blind trust in what egocentricity is saying, sometimes mostly without even realizing that's who we're trusting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the guidance may come in from life, from a coach, from any number of sources, but it gets automatically filtered through that. Or somehow even deflected, maybe through that voice that we're listening to, that we're attending to, and so once we catch on that process is happening, it's like, wait a minute, I'm not even letting it's not even getting in. I can't even follow the advice because the advice is getting screwed up through this system, right? And so once we get that, we can begin to, you know, dismantle the system, which is what we're doing here in this practice. And then, in that way, the guidance can reach us. We have a shot at applying it.
Yeah, and that last part, that's what I was looking at as you were talking to. We got the applying it, because that's the other part of it, too, is there has to be a instantaneous movement in the direction that's being suggested. You know, because otherwise the condition of the resistance is just immediately there. But somebody says, hey, you ought to try this. Okay, that's it. I'm gone. You know, I've got one. Where are my shoes? Or, you know, whatever it is. And that really, like I can remember, it's funny how all these things are just dropping in, but I got sent to this, I played basketball too, sent to this basketball camp when I was, and mostly I think it was just to, get me out of the way for a period of time, because we were moving house and there's, you know, so he, you know, anyway. But I can remember being at that place and I had a horrible time. The one thing I remember from that is similar to the other thing, which that I mentioned a minute ago, where there's this guy who was there who was a really good basketball player. You know, I think he was a college player or something. I don't know how old I was. I must have been like 12 or something. Mm-hmm. And he said, the way he got good was he decided that you know, it was during the summer. He would not go to bed at night unless he had shot basketball. Mm-hmm. Unless he'd taken some shots. Mm-hmm. So he basically did it every single day. Mm-hmm. And that was such good advice. Mm-hmm. And I didn't follow it, you know. I mean, because it just goes in and then it gets, well, I can't do that, or, you know, I don't need to, or something. And then, but now it's like something like that, or ideally, I can't say it always happens at all, actually, but, you know, something like that comes in and it gets recognized as something that's really valuable and important. Yeah. It's like, okay, I'm going to get that on my practice plan, or I'm going to record about it. I'm going to do it right now. You know, whatever it is, because there has to be that response that moves out of the inertia into the place that's being pointed at.
Yeah, and would you say the capacity the capacity to move that instantaneously is let's see. What the verb would be, predicated or dependent on that system being somewhat dismantled?
For sure.
And so then once that's happened, there's a recognition that this is valuable, because before there was no recognition.
Yeah, it's funny. I think that's kind of what those memories are about. It's like, I mean, on some level, I think that's important. I had never thought of that before. I practice every day, I would get better. you know, that just never occurred to me. Or, you know, or the thing about, you know, actually, I think it'd be better if I tried to, you know, go for accuracy rather than, there was a recognition of it there, but it just got closed over.
Yeah.
But it's funny, because it's like, you know, Buddhism is a lot of times talked about as the negative way, because mm-hmm. it's the dismantling of the covering it over. Mm-hmm. I think this is kind of what you're pointing at.
Yeah.
That makes it possible for that recognition to be there, and also the yes response that comes from it.
Yes, because what I project anyway on what you're saying is that guidance or that coaching or all that was, I mean, we can just guess that it's dropping in all the time.
That's what it was. Yeah.
All the time. Mm-hmm. You know, that maybe we weren't so neglected as kids as I often did. Nobody ever guided me to, you know, how do I know what college to go to? I didn't, you know, well, maybe there was guidance. And maybe, you know, and what we're talking about is maybe that system was just so intact that it took the dismantling of it so that we could then go back to that place as little children when the instantaneous response mm-hmm. is available to us.
Yeah, I think you're right on with that. That's fascinating too, because as you're talking, I'm looking at, you know, my particular karma, my version of it, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, this autonomy that I've been helped to see mm-hmm. since I've been here, especially in the last little while, a couple years. That's completely oriented towards not being available to the guidance that's offered, and to the willingness to follow it, and to the just and the energy of just practice.
Yeah.
It was completely. The whole point of that was to make sure that wasn't wasn't available.
Yeah.
I'll just be off on my own, believing the better ideas that are in my head, ignoring the evidence that was, I'm sure, was there all the time about how that wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this closed system that is self-perpetuating through mm-hmm. time, mm-hmm. and it's not supposed to be interfered with or changed mm-hmm. throughout an entire lifetime.
Yeah.
And I feel really grateful that it got, you know, kicked around a little, so I had a chance to have a different kind of experience.
Yeah, and you know, I bet that just like you're seeing that, so good to see, isn't it? How mm-hmm. everything about our particular karmic disposition was served in that process, and now it's being dismantled. And just like through autonomy or whatever, I bet each of us mm-hmm. can see mm-hmm. exactly how okay, this particular propensity I have was totally supported by, you know,
the it all leads to the, it has the same objective. Is that
yes,
what you mean?
That's what I was saying.
Different avenues.
Yes, and we can all see with a certain amount of what I project is real gratification, well, definitely gratitude you just expressed for seeing it. Mm-hmm. We can all kind of get to that same particular place, but the same exact outcome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's fascinating, isn't it? That someone who has looks like they have a completely different life orientation to me actually has the same orientation,
yeah.
Which is to keep the guidance out.
Yeah.
And again, to make sure nothing works and, you know, it's unsuccessful and I end up feeling like a victim in the last meal.
Yeah. But the end, and not only is the outcome for suffering the same, but the process of dismantling the system is the same.
That's true, too. Mm-hmm. Whatever the system might happen to be.
Boy, that's really fascinating. Everything has been really fascinating this morning, but that particularly, that seeing that system, that whatever that is for each of us. And if I go back to the first conversation of the day about the sports, I can see a big piece of that. So I wasn't one of those people that was good at sports, and I wasn't on teams. And when I had to be on a team because of some phys ed class or something, I was always last chosen and, you know, stood out in right field where nothing happened. And so, you know, the analogy of playing the game is not something that that the conditioning wants to do. You know, I don't want to get on the playing field. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
When I got on the playing field, I got laughed at.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to repeat that experience. Mm-hmm. And I didn't, you know, I somehow got a message really early on that if you can't do it right the first time, you might as well not try. Mm. You know, I mean, because I remember that happening all the time. Okay, I'll try this. Well, I wasn't good at it. Oh, okay, then never mind. Mm-hmm. You know, there not only was there no sense of practice, there was no sense of, you know, why would you want to do this?
Yeah.
You know?
No possibility.
No, no. And so just, you know, how the process of, you know, and a long time ago in practice, we were doing some exercise where we kind of came up with our basic karmic message. And, mm-hmm. and for me, it was, sometimes still is, it's too hard, I can't, I quit.
Mm-hmm. It's too hard, I can't,
I quit. You know, and that's the system that kept this being in its container, mm-hmm. you know. And, you know, it's kind of a miracle that I'm still here in this practice. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've tried really hard on a couple of occasions to quit. If it wasn't for the kind of guide we have, I wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, when you think about that message, totally, it's too hard, I can't, I quit, it is a miracle.
It is.
Because going against knowing the power that, well, not really, but the power we give it, you know, basically through our attention, then, if that's the message that you were working, you know, working with all these years, it really is a miracle that it hasn't worked.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, and the message also that goes with it, you know, with those things that are too hard, is they're not any fun. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, when little kids are out there playing games, you know, if they're having fun. Mm-hmm. It wasn't my experience. You know, it was like, I just need to survive this until it's over. Mm-hmm. You know, so what, in the last email class, when we were asked to come up with a word that would, you know, what would, why we practice, what is it about practice, what, it, and the word that arose out of all the words that arose was fun. Mm-hmm. I said, because conditioning hates that word more than anything else in the system.
Yeah.
It will drive it crazy if I look at something as fun.
Because then there will be no desire to, then the I can't will even work.
Right. So what difference does it make?
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah. And then there's no motivation to quit. If you're not a failure at it, then you know, why would you quit?
Right.
Yeah. It could say fun would be the kryptonite to condition.
Yeah. And, you know, and it comes in with this voice about, well, you don't even know how to do that. So, you know, why would you choose that?
Yeah,
maybe for that.
Which,
maybe for that reason.
So yeah, so that's what you could reply.
Fun.
Yeah. Just for the fun of it.
Just for the fun of it.
Yeah.
But you know, I hadn't, I had not, until it was brought up this morning, realized how big a player that had been in my life, yeah. That I didn't see that kind of thing as fun.
Yeah, yeah. And then, now having seen it, how perfect that word is.
How too. Perfect that word is, yeah. Even more perfect than it seemed before.
Yeah, exactly. Gosh, that is great.
Thank you. Came back. Actually, a couple of things. One, it's just so interesting, isn't it? That, I mean, if you needed convincing that karma was a something, just hearing everyone talk, and then going back to my own experience of sports growing up, it's like, it's all there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But one experience I've looked at a lot over the years in terms of practice is I rode crew, you know, like rowing. Mm-hmm. And I was the captain of our team senior year, and it's a very intense sport, mm-hmm. for short periods of time. Mm-hmm. So the races are like 7 minutes long or something, but it's incredibly intense. And it would be fascinating if I could go back and be inside my body, you know, in that time. But mm-hmm. at least the story has always been, I never went all out.
Mm-hmm.
That I always held something back because I was afraid. Because, like, at the end of races, at least for me, often you'd like cough and you could taste blood, that kind of thing, like, because it was so like cardiovascularly intense for short periods of time. And it's like, and the same thing like with field hockey, not the same intensity, but the same like quality of, okay, you know, all right at it, mm-hmm. but like not fully in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and I see that as an orientation, mm-hmm. of kind of hanging back a little bit. And it's not even so much that, I mean, it can get tricky because how much of that is a story? Well, mm-hmm. you're just hanging back, mm-hmm. you know? But it's more, what I look at with it now is that I love that thing of, I can't remember exactly how Sherry says it, but basically, you know, if you're going to fall, just be going 100 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. Just go, you know? And it's that kind of sense, mm-hmm. of like, so being in the middle of the game and just giving it everything I've got, knowing that life is going to take care of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like,
yeah.
I don't need to, I guess that's what it is. I don't need to be careful and hold something in reserve just in case.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah. So the karma then would be the karmic orientation would be to then sort of hold, just have a little back door,
like,
have a little reserve.
I'm going to kind of manage it here.
Yeah, 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 I'm going to manage it. Mm-hmm. Instead of this kind of abandon, mm-hmm. that to life, like giving it, letting go of everything, rather than giving it all you got, letting go of everything,
yeah.
and giving whatever's called for, and yeah. that's which in the rowing is huge. It's intense for a short period of time,
yeah.
and there also I think you said maybe a story about that. Like maybe you did give. You know,
who knows?
But what
right.
you're looking at now is the disposition or the orientation,
yeah.
to hold that.
Yeah, because actually, even it's one of those. Even if I were giving it everything I've got, and that story's there, that itself would create that mechanism.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I mean?
I think so.
It's still the I managing it.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
some sense.
So, yeah. So even if you did, like, physically give it everything you've got, but there's that story, and that, we might mention, the attention is on.
Right.
Then there it is. That's the mechanism itself of kind of managing, being in charge of.
Right, right. Yeah.
Not the running just as fast as you can when you fall flat on your face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just going.
Right.
Yeah. And I was... The other piece of it was back in the conversation around, you know, when we're first doing a sport and we really have to kind of concentrate and be there for it. And what I was seeing, what dropped in around that conversation was the possibility of staying at the edge of our game always. So, because what I saw in that was, actually it's very related to this process that I'm talking about. I think there's a process that happens for this person around, let me just get good enough, mm-hmm. and then we'll be set. Mm-hmm. You know, so like, get good enough in crew to whatever, get good enough in field hockey to make varsity, get good enough to, mm-hmm. and then there's kind of that, okay, good, that's enough. Mm-hmm. But it misses the joy completely, mm-hmm. you know, and that's the crucial part. It's the same thing of giving 100%, mm-hmm. but it seems like, I mean, what I project onto, like, because it would be, like, in tennis, you could get really good and then, you know, stay good. Yeah, you know, you go out and you play regularly and you stay good. But that's not what Venus Williams did.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's not what the Buddha did.
Yeah.
You know, get to a place where I practice and so my life works. Mm-hmm. My life works and, mm-hmm. you know, we'll say I don't listen to the voices. But it's like, I suspect we could always stay at that edge that something, being brand new to something, requires of us. Mm-hmm. That we're always, because there's always something deeper. There's yeah. always more. And just the joy mm-hmm. of always being in that place where we're on our toes. Because where, it's like we're putting ourselves at the edge of what's next, kind of.
Yeah. Gosh, that because what, and in this whole game of working out our own salvation diligently, we can guess that is a requirement.
Truly. I mean, yeah, again, I mean, I think, I remember saying to Sherry early on in practice, in a guidance form, gosh, I wonder if, I could see how practice would just be something to kind of improve your life a little. Mm-hmm. I wonder if I'll do that, or if I'll just really mm-hmm. go for it.
Yeah.
Because that sense of that, it's going to require it of us every moment.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it joyful.
Yes.
It truly does.
Yeah. Because, and that's where a couple of email classes are. Number five, or anyway, when we talk about not keeping score,
yeah,
that is the mechanism for that's the varsity, or that's the, I'll get this, you know, the keeping score mm-hmm. is the mechanism that guides us to that settling.
Yeah, the plateau.
The plateau.
Okay, I got what I wanted.
Yeah. When we throw keeping score out, then yeah. we're in a sense throwing all of that kind of measurement stuff out,
right.
which then releases us yeah. to be that fullness, that yeah. that on the edge-ness yeah. that you're describing.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because if you take away the carrots, then we're just doing it for the process.
Yeah.
There, you know, if you take away the thing we're going to get, uh-huh. you know, the reward, the, you know, getting on the right team or whatever.
Or even just satisfying conditioning for a while so that it stays off my back.
Yeah.
And lets me think I'm an okay enough person.
Right. Mm-hmm. If you take all that away, then truly what's available to us is finding the joy in the process.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, so much better than all of the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
That I feel like that's a big piece of what practice does. It's funny language, but it's like it forces us past what we could settle for.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah, and it really does feel like the forcing us yeah. past, because yeah. everything we've been conditioned to is like, yeah. no, but that's really, I'm fine, that's fine,
yeah.
really, you know? And it just relentless in its compassion that way, too.
Yeah, and coaching is the right analogy for it, because it's like the relationship of again, if we go to like a Venus Williams, I have no idea, but I can imagine her coach is serious, you know? But it's like, she keeps choosing that. I mean, she at any point she could say, I'm firing you, I don't want to play tennis anymore, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So it's not like the coach is, there's just this, I don't know how to say it, but it's not just like this forcing, it's a reciprocal relationship that we have with practice.
Yes.
We keep saying, I want to be coached, and so we keep getting that coaching.
Yeah.
We're asking for it. It's nothing that is being forced on us, it's not being yeah. imposed on us.
Right, which is really helpful to remember when
subjective of why yeah. they treat me this way. Especially if you live in the monster.
Yeah, really. Because we keep showing up.
Right.
That's why.
Truly.
Yeah.
You truly. You know, what am I? Well, you could go.
Uh-huh.
I mean, any of us at any point could just walk away, but we don't.
Yeah. Yeah. And because that which we are seeking is causing us to
struggle. Yeah, yeah. And when we get that, when we really, really get it, and that in those times where it's like, I hate this, we don't identify with that. You know, maybe it feels momentarily like we believe that or whatever, But ultimately, the evidence is we're not identifying with it because we're here practicing.
Yeah. And that's just kind of tying it back into the sort of the 1-2 punch then. When we momentarily feel like poor us, we're here and this has been forced on us, then we remember that. We can go to that, well, I'm here.
Yeah.
And that short circuits the whole rest of the suffering process if we are willing to take it.
That reminds me of something that just dropped in very recently that I'm going to practice with, which is, so when I'm disidentified, just enjoying the stew out of that. Just, you know, playing and being and smiling. And when I'm identified, just relax into it.
Yeah.
Just completely let go and relax into it. And just see what that's like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And go, by definition, going with whatever's here.
Just going with whatever's here. So when I'm disidentified, you know, I'm disidentified. That's what's here. When I'm identified, I'm identified. That's what's here.
Yeah.
Just relaxing into it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Thank you.